Hi, I'm Julia Guerrero Reed, and I'm here with my dad, Roger Reed. We're in McAllen, Texas, and today is February 17th, 2019. We're going to be talking about some of our ancestors who came to the United States from Catalonia in the mid-1800s to start a utopian socialist commune called Icaria. When did you start researching our family history? I know that receiving the Montaldo letters and our trips to Catalonia were a big inspiration for you.
There wasn't any single point where I began doing research on that subject, because it's something that I had been hearing bits and pieces of information about from my father, Jack Reed, and his first cousin, Barbara Montaldo. Well, really, ever since I was a child, and I could tell that they thought that some of the family history they knew, which was not complete, was interesting to them, and it was interesting to me. I never followed up on it in a systematic way. In fact, I still can't really say that I've been as systematic as I had hoped to be about studying the ancestry of the family, and particularly that connection with the Icarian socialist movement. But in any event, by the early 1990s, my father was well into his late 70s, and as things turned out, he would rapidly go into dementia in the mid 90s and passed away probably from Alzheimer's in 1995. So anyway, by the early 90s, I could see, I could see that there was an end to the tunnel, but it wasn't. There wasn't a light at the end of the tunnel. It was just darkness, and so I thought that I would try to find out from him as much as I knew, and as much as he knew, rather. And so that led him to reminding me that his cousin, a lady named Carol Warnoff, who is the daughter of my grandmother's sister. That's Eve Montaldo. My grandmother was Nell. They were very good friends, and I had met Eve. So anyway, after I learned from my father that Carol Warnoff had done some research over the years on the family, and that he thought that she had collected some papers on that, I reached out and made contact with Carol, who at that time was... she was probably well into her 70s also, and was single and living in Clearwater, Florida. And so with my wife, Anna, in, I believe, 1993, I visited her. And she, it was the first and only time I met her. I was very glad to learn that, in fact, what my father had said was true, that she did have a whole lot of papers, and that family papers and correspondence. And at the end of our initial meeting at her home, she just on the spot decided to entrust these papers to me, these family papers, and asked only that I made sure that they were taken care of and ultimately be taken someplace where they could be translated from Spanish and French into English, transcribed so that they would be more legible, and placed in an appropriate archive. And so I said certainly, at which point she directed me up into her very hot and humid and unair-conditioned attic in Florida to a box of these papers, which I hauled down through the scuttle hole. Obviously, that was not the best way to store documents like that. But anyway, that was in about 1993, and that was a trove of information. When my father, and I began digging through that, when my father died in 1995, I went to Iowa, to Corning, Iowa, where the Icarian Society was happening to have their annual meeting, where I obtained a lot more information about not only about my family on the Montalvo side and their role in the Icarian Utopian movement, but also about the movement as a whole. And I've built on that, worked on it off and on, as I say, not in a particularly systematic way for a number of years. The advent of internet research and the increasing availability of material on the internet has made that a much easier and more interesting task. Back when Carol got the information that she did, a lot of it she had to go to Washington, D.C. and get out of the National Archives in person. But in any event, those materials are now at the, for the last year and a half or so anyway, been at the University of Nebraska Library at Lincoln, where they have been digitized and are still awaiting transcription and translation and further scholarly study, but that's still underway.
Okay, so how far back have you been able to trace the Montalvos? Like, who was the earliest one you've been able to identify?
The earliest name that I've been able to identify, and this is just anecdotally really, is that the I'd always heard from my father and other of the Montalvos that the name, in fact, came from the area of Genoa, Liguria, and Italy. And I looked through the list of the doges, the semi-elected rulers of the Republic of Genoa. Sure enough, there was a Leonardo Montalvo who was doge for a short period of time. I mean, given the political instability in Genoa throughout most of its existence as a republic, none of the doges lasted for more than a year or two. And then there was another one, I believe it was Leonardo's son, I don't recall what his name is. I have no idea whether those Montalvos are related to us or not, but in any event, that's the earliest record I have of the name on anything. Fast forward though several centuries to Spain, and I have been able to identify Jose Montalvo, or Joseph in Catalan, and his wife Josefa, and I became aware of his name because her name was listed on a Spanish government document from the mid-19th century as being the widow of Jose and receiving a pension, and her name, last name, was Reges, R-E-G-E-S, and of course that conforms to my great-great-grandfather, Jose and Josefa's son Ignacio, who according to his passport was born in Logroño, in the community of La Rioja in northern Spain, which is not part of Catalonia, but they were Catalans, in 1821, as I recall. I have the passport, I don't recall the exact date. I suppose Ignacio would be the earliest ancestor where I have a confirmed birth date and some more information other than the name. Apparently Ignacio's father, which would have been my great-great-great-grandfather, was a lawyer, and in fact a retired judge, which is how his widow, my great 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 grandmother Josefa, qualified for a pension. There were two other brothers of Ignacio, one of whom, Pedro, came to the United States shortly after Ignacio, and then another, Jose, Pepe, stayed in Spain. But they did consider themselves Catalan, I know from the not only the name, but also the references in their correspondence to each other being Catalan. However, as the custom in the 19th century, and Catalan was probably, I suspect, the language they spoke with each other and in the home, but all of their writing was in Spanish.
And what did the three brothers do? What were their professions?
Well, Ignacio, I think in his late teens or early 20s, served in one of the in the regional militia during the Carlist Wars in Spain, a period of great turmoil and violence and civil war in Spain, which would have been around the late 1830s into the early 1840s. He then attended the University of Barcelona, where, according to his diploma that I was able to obtain from Carol, he got his degree in mathematics and geography. Now, in terms of his gainful employment after that, I don't know whether he taught or what he did to support himself, but by the mid 1840s, certainly he was becoming very involved in leftist politics in Spain. I believe he probably would have considered himself a Republican, anti-monarchist, and a socialist, or later communist by the time he joined the Icarian utopian movement, which was centered in France and had been really conceived by a French thinker, Etienne Cabet, C-A-B-E-T. Ignacio was involved with the publication of a socialist and probably considered to be seditious newspaper in Barcelona in the late 1840s, 1847, 1848 specifically, when he essentially had to flee Spain for his political beliefs, joined the Icarian movement formally in France, sailed from the port of Bordeaux, aboard a ship named the Cabot, and landed in New Orleans in, I believe, October, according to the ship's manifest, October of 1848, along with a lot of his Icarian compatriots, and that's where I believe he met a fellow Icarian, a young woman, Céline Pigné from Paris, who became his wife, my great-great-grandmother. And then he had a brother, Pedro, who I think had similar political beliefs. Pedro became a lawyer in Spain and had the position of crown advocate, which was essentially like a district attorney, as I understand it at the time. But when a reactionary conservative government came to power, Pedro was not only out, but apparently felt no longer safe in Spain, and found himself in Milan, where he apparently married a lady named Adelaida Larrumbe, L-A-R-R-U-M-B-E, who was an opera singer, and from whom he later separated. I don't know whether they were divorced, because I'm not sure whether they were actually formally married or not, but her name appears in the 1850s in certain South American cities, Montevideo, Uruguay, Santiago de Chile, appearing as a in opera performances there. But anyway, Pedro decided to come to the U.S. His timing was maybe not so good, but in any event, he arrived in the U.S. I'm not sure when, but just shortly before the Civil War. Didn't know English. He spoke Spanish, Catalan, French, and Italian at least, but not English. But he enlisted in the Union Army and served in the 6th Regiment of the Ohio Volunteer Infantry.
And he and his brother wrote lots of letters to each other, and those are some of the letters that you have, right?
Yes. It's really what it is one side of their correspondence. I have a few letters that Ignacio wrote to Pedro that obviously Ignacio had copied and wanted to keep, so we would have a record of the letter that he wrote to Pedro. But almost all of the rest of the letters, and there are at least 100 of them, maybe considerably more, are Pedro writing to his brother Ignacio. And there's a lot of discussion in those letters about what's going on in the world, particularly in Spain as well as in the U.S. politically and militarily. Mixed in with that, of course, was a lot of the mundane type of things that you would expect in any family discussions, of things like, regarding that loan I made to you for X amount, I really need the money back. You know, when do you think you might pay me? That sort of thing. But they maintained, I think, a very cordial and close relationship based on correspondence, which after Ignacio died in about 1871, Pedro continued for another 10 years or so until his death. Ignacio was an ardent Icarian utopian believer, was one of the first settlers, was part of the first group of Icarians that established the colony in Nauvoo, Illinois, and then later in southwestern Iowa, near the present city of Corning. This was before there was Corning, Iowa. Or even before Adams, there was an Adams County organized in Iowa where the old site is now. But Ignacio was a true believer. He left the colony for a few years for reasons that are unclear to me, and taught Spanish in Cincinnati, but then returned to the colony by the end of the Civil War, and by 1870 or so had been elected president of the colony. Every year they elected a different president, and Ignacio was that. So he, by the time of his death, had over a 20-year period or 20-year history as being a member, and indeed I think very active and prominent believer and a participant in the Icarian movement in this country. Pedro had his foot shot off by a Confederate mini ball at the Battle of Murfreesboro or Stones River in early 1863 or late 1862, received a pension for that, and also used his status as a war veteran plus his knowledge of Spanish and education generally to land a job first as an assistant professor and then later full professor of Spanish at the U.S. Naval Academy, Annapolis, a position that he held until his death in around 1884 or so. And then the third brother, José Montaldo, remained in Spain, and I have a lot of correspondence from him also. He was a lawyer, became a a judge on the Court of Appeals in Valencia, in the southern part of Catalonia, which was for that time equivalent probably to being a judge on one of the federal circuit courts of appeals. And anyway, he held that position for a period of time, then retired. I think he was litigious to the end. There was one reported case I read that ended up in the Supreme Court of Spain involving a property dispute that Jose had gotten himself into, in which, interestingly, he lost. I mean, the opinion of the Supreme Court was very gentle to him, as best I could understand the rather flowery legal language they used. But in the end, agreed with the opponent. So that was that. Jose had a son, Federico, who became a doctor and did a great deal of work. He was in the Spanish Navy and became the equivalent of the chief doctor of the Spanish Navy, and did a great deal of research in public health issues. They're still dealing, for example, with cholera outbreaks, and he wrote a lot about those kinds of matters, and had maintained a correspondence with my great grandfather, George Montaldo, who was Ignacio's son.
And so those Montaldos who we saw in the phone book when I was little, when we were in Spain, those were probably direct descendants of this one, of that brother.
They may have been, although whether a direct descendant or perhaps a descendant from a generation, one or two generations further back, I don't know. One of the letters from, I believe, Pedro to Ignacio in the early 1850s refers to their cousins in the plural. So I don't know who those people were, but they could well have been the direct lineal ancestors of the person that whose name we found in the phone book in Logroño.
Well, and then going back a little bit to the Carrion colony, what do you think it was like for them living out on the frontier? It must have been tough.
Well, it was. It was very hard. I think Ignacio and some of the other earliest Icarians to the Iowa colony were in fact the first ones who built it. They lived through their first winter, as I understand it, essentially in a mud hut, a dugout with the sod roofs, which was typical of what the other pioneers were doing as the prairies were being settled at that time. There was no railroad. The closest town of any kind then would have been probably St. Joseph, Missouri, on the Missouri River. But that was as the crow flies, about 70 miles away or so, and there were no roads or easy ways to travel around then. But the colony apparently made it through the first winter, because by the next year they were constructing log cabins, and I have an early map of the colony. It's really more of a bird's eye aerial diagram of it that shows the Montaldo cabin, which is one of about seven or eight log cabins that were there, each of them with a different family, and then of course their communal dining hall, which was always a feature of the communal life on the colony.
And how long did the Icarian colony last?
The colony went through several divisions, and none of the splinter groups lasted for very long. But from the beginning of the colony in the U.S. in 1848, when it became legally incorporated, it in one form or another continued until 1895, when in Adams County, Iowa, Corning, it was placed into receivership and dissolved. By that time, most all of the colonists through the years had left. There were only maybe about 20 or 25 left, and most of them were old men by then, and their spouses, and the kids having moved on. So the colony was legally dissolved. Everything was I think non-controversial at that point, and so the legal existence of the colony came to an end, sadly but smoothly, and without any particular storm and stress.
Well, and then what did the Montaldos do after the colony disbanded? I know that two of our more recent ancestors, that they started a high-end department store chain.
Yeah, well, that's true, but I think that arose because of George Montaldo. George was one of the two children, children that lived of Ignacio Montaldo and his wife Celine. George was brought up on the Iowa colony, according to Icarian principles of communal living. But a communistic type of society apparently did not appeal to George. There was a contemporary later book written by a colonist, Marie Ross, who was a contemporary of George's on the colony, and she wrote about how George and son got together with some of his other boys, and in violation of all of the colony rules, when they were young and in their early teens, set up a store,
against communist principles.
Yeah, it was against communist principles. It was against the rules of the colony, and was completely antithetical to what the Icarians were trying to create. And so I think that initial Montaldo store was probably disbanded by George's parents and their neighbors, but in any event, by the late mid to late 1870s, George and his mother Celine, Ignacio's widow, left the colony. They basically cashed in their share of the colony. George then opened a dry goods store in Corning called Montaldo's, which operated for a number of years until sometime in the very late 1890s, maybe around 1900. George moved to the area of southwestern Missouri, northeastern Oklahoma, southeastern Kansas, where all of those states come together. I suspect because there was then a lead mining boom going on around Joplin, Missouri, but that was then quickly followed by an early 20th century oil boom in southeastern Kansas around Independence, and also in northeastern Oklahoma, in and around the Osage lands. So George, ever the businessman, ended up owning a grist mill in Noel, Missouri, where my father was born in 1915, He owned a furniture store in Commerce, Oklahoma, and I think may have had other business interests also. And two of his daughters, Lillian and my grandma Nell Montaldo, who was a couple of years younger than Aunt Lillian, in 1919 started in Independence, Kansas, which then was in the midst of an oil boom, a high end clothing store called Montaldo's, which from that grew later into a national chain of, I mean, it wasn't a large chain, but a group of 12 or 15 very high end stores in different parts of the country. We don't have any records of this. I strongly suspect, though, that for two ladies, young ladies, and at that time in that place, namely my Aunt Lillian and Grandma Nell, to start this store was, I mean, that was not only highly unusual, but they would have needed to, and I don't think, and they had a, well, I don't know how they financed it. I strongly suspect, though, that that their father George probably co-signed the note for them borrow the money to start the store. But in any event, it became very successful after that. My grandma Nell was already married, and my father was born and had been born in 1915 in Independence. So when they started the store, she was married. She had a little kid, namely my father. So she stayed in Independence to mind the store there, where Aunt Lillian, which I think is what she always wanted to do, began going off to New York to buy clothes and to bring all of the latest fashions and the merchandise of the highest quality available to little Independence, Kansas.
Well, and they might be where I got my love of fashion from.
Could be, who knows.
And so your Aunt Lillian and Grandma Nell, they were the granddaughters of Ignacio.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. It was a large family. They had several other sisters who at one time or another were involved in the Montaldo's stores. A couple of brothers. They were mostly women, and the youngest, or no, actually the second youngest of the Montaldo sisters of that generation, was Eve Montaldo, who was the mother of Carol Montaldo, that ended up with all of these papers that she then entrusted to me and that I've now delivered to the University of Nebraska.
And is she the one who went walking across the country? Which one was that one?
Yes, Eve was always, all of the Montaldo women were very independent in their own way. Eve was perhaps the most unconventionally independent of them. And this was pretty extreme, given what Lillian and Nell had done starting the Montaldo stores. But Eve wanted to, well, she went to Cornell and graduated from Cornell University. She married shortly after she got out of Cornell. But I think that marriage didn't work, which, given what I later learned about Eve, meeting her when I was a child, I understand how she would be difficult. Anyway, though, Eve wanted to pursue a career acting, and so she went to New York City, and like so many other people who wanted to do that, she didn't get anywhere, didn't get any parts in plays. So she went to California. I think at that time probably that Hollywood was maybe just starting to emerge as a as future side of the entertainment industry business. But anyway, you've got the idea to walk across the country, literally to walk from California back to New York, which she did, as kind of a publicity tour as a single young woman walking on her own. She was working her way as she went. She said the only help that she got from her father, George, is that at one point her shoes had worn out and she didn't have money for a new pair of shoes, so he sent her the money for that. Otherwise, she just did that on her own, but I think she was a master of publicity, so that at almost every stop she would be met by the local newspaper and interviewed. And so her walk across the country at its different stages began to be picked up by the national newspapers, and so you can go on websites now, like newspapers.com, for example, just, you know, look that up in different newspapers, and there she is.
So it's kind of like in Forrest Gump, where Forrest Gump walks across the country.
Yeah, I haven't thought of that, but yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Well, we're actually almost out of time here on the app, but I'm glad that you and I come from a line of such a strong and independent people.
Well, they're interesting, but all of them could also be very difficult in their own ways.
Well, for better or for worse, sometimes you need to be difficult.
Sometimes you need to be difficult, and if being difficult was an ingredient of getting what you wanted and making a change and breaking the mold, then they certainly had that covered.
Well, that's probably how they managed out on the frontier in the winter in the colony.
Well, and so even with Ignacio and Pedro, you know, getting the heck out of Spain intact. You know, given their political beliefs and activities.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Let's see. Are you sure?